Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
The disgusting,
and it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to a special emergency episode of A Typical Disgusting Display. And we're fired up. We're celebrating today. Is it because we don't have to do Johnny jokes? Maybe a little bit, but more because the strike has ended. The WGA strike has ended. And we have someone who's been on our podcast a few times before. He was nice enough to come back in today and talk about the strike and what we won. So please welcome former Family Guy showrunner, former WGA president, current WGA negotiating board member,
woo-hoo,
the hero of the day, Mr. David Goodman. David, thank you so much for coming in today.
Welcome.
It's my pleasure. This is like this is the end of the trilogy. I've done three typical disgusting displays, and it's going to be like all third chapters really disappointing.
like Return of the Jedi.
Just Return of the Jedi, exactly.
First joke of the day. You
know, or the third Family Guy Star Wars, which I co-wrote.
Were we tired by then. But my compatriot Goldie here has requested the first question. Goldie?
So you've
Wait,
won
before
this
you do the first question.
Yeah.
Before,
yes.
Before you do the first question, I'm just stopping everything just to do a shout out to one of your listeners. This is somebody who's a big fan of your show.
Yeah,
and she listens regularly.
Dana Walden.
I know you have a woman, a one woman fan. Her name is Susan Sprung, and the importance to this story is she's married to Chris Kaiser, my co-chair of the negotiating committee. I'm just going to take a second to thank Susan because Chris had to make a lot of personal sacrifices to do what he did for the union and the town.
Yeah.
And I know Susan listens, so I'm just saying thank you.
That's hi, good. Susan.
Well,
thank you.
He didn't have to sleep with everyone on the AMPTP, did he? I mean, it's not that kind of a sacrifice.
I'm so glad I took that moment to thank you.
Go ahead, Goldie. Let's get to business.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just want to say to Susan, if you ever want to come on and just talk about Chris and sort of his merits and demerits,
yeah, open
just
invite
let you go, you
open
know,
this invite.
Open invite. Yeah, no, so David, you've won this incredible victory and you've, you know, really sacrificed a lot. You're a hero to many, not all, but many. How does it feel after all this to go back to being just another fucking writer?
Second joke of the day. Second joke.
That's actually, it's my hope I can still be just another fucking writer. Fucking target on my back. But no, it's going to be fine.
It's on your front, worry. David. Come on. The target is not
Don't worry about me, guys. I'm going to be fine. I'm not nervous at all.
Well, you can always come back to Family Guy. I mean, not this season or next season. We're kind of full up, but you just keep in touch. You know, keep in touch.
Like a lot of the offers.
It was more Meredith than you, wasn't it? More Chris than you and Meredith than you? Like, you weren't that involved. You were there, certainly, but like, you weren't.
I kept trying. You guys aren't being reasonable. This is crazy.
David,
stop,
I'm sure you're going to have no problem getting a job because you're such good friends with all the agents. but seriously, David, it's
like
watch.
I feel like I'm talking to my wife.
Oh, God. Well, David, but in all seriousness, and we've been seeing it on everybody's social media, and you know, reposting things. I was watching a lot of the clips of the WGA meeting last night where you were given just a lengthy ovation. You had a very funny speech and a touching speech about the, the strike captains and the lot people who were like our parents. And I noticed you got in there giving us snacks. You love snacks. Snacks is like, so anyone who gives snacks, you're on board.
That's a big thing for me, snacks.
Yeah, see, I knew it. Good, we're getting down to the nitty gritty. But seriously, you've been going through this now for 5 months with the rest of us, but in a unique position because you're as Lin-Manuel Miranda would say, you're in the room where it happened. So yeah. When did you feel the change in negotiations and like, okay, we're getting somewhere, this might happen for us?
Yeah, it really started about a week and a half ago. Chris and I were having conversations with CEOs. We'd been having them all the way through, literally from even before we went on strike. We kept them kind of quiet. We were trying our best to get them to be reasonable, and then really they really got serious, and they wanted to get back in the room with us. And so that last Wednesday, when we started negotiations in earnest with the CEOs, and they came with some very serious proposals that were really game changing in terms of getting us to the final deal, we said, okay, we're on the path here. We're going to get this now. Still, we had to keep it quiet. You never know. It could have blown up.
Right.
But we were like, okay, they're sending signals that the big thing that they gave us on that first day was this proposal around a success-based residual in streaming, which they, at the beginning of this and through most of this strike, they said, we're never going to do that. And wow. Then here they had done this work to actually make this proposal. It's a beginning proposal. It showed us that they, okay, they're serious. They want a deal. They've been saying that they really want a deal. And it was really last Wednesday, and then it was like this, okay, nose to the grindstones, let's get this done. How do we negotiate to the end?
Is it in the room, is it tense or cordial? Is it very formal? Like what sort of happens? Like you have a table, they have a table, and what's like the mood and the tone?
You know, I just want to make this joke. I'm sorry, I've said it to members, and there's this Bob Iger and Donald Langley and Ted Sarandos and David Zaslav. Having a meeting with David Goodman is not a power move.
Well, it might be now. It might be now. It's like twice.
I think they're done with me, but
So were they like, I mean, can you feel off them a vibe of like, hey, we're upset? Or is it more cordial? Like, hey, we know like things have been tense, but
it goes up and down. I mean, I think that in this negotiation with the CEOs, they really wanted to make a deal. It was mostly very cordial. It was mostly like that, like, we hear you, we're coming to you with something serious. There were moments of tension. There was one funny moment with one of the CEOs. Chris was explaining something, and he said, Chris, enough with the speeches. I'm tired of you telling me why this is right.
Right. Oh my God, that's actually, wow. I mean, a therapist would applaud that statement. It's like...
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
But that was probably the tensest moment in the negotiations. Oh. For the most part, they were serious. They were like, okay, we got to end this. We've got to get to a deal that we can live with and you can live with. And there were real moments, especially around AI. There were real honest conversations about how we are actually aligned on this subject with them, that this is a threat to both the creatives and the companies. And that was actually very gratifying, to get to a moment where everybody was done posturing, everybody was done, you know, protecting themselves against looking weak. And we had this conversation that was like, yeah, you know, we're on the same side of this issue, and that,
wow. And we're both scared of spiders too. you just try to slip in a little personal.
I'm not scared of spiders.
David Goodman, not scared of spiders. You heard it here. We're getting the important facts out early. I want to, because you mentioned this AI thing, which I think it was kind of an issue that, for many reasons, came to the forefront. It was an issue that gained sort of national prominence as one of the things we were fighting against or fighting for, depending on how you look at it. So I want to talk a little bit about this for a minute, because I'm not sure I fully got my arms around exactly what we wanted in terms of AI. And also, when my thought of it always is like, oh my God, they're fighting these companies like Amazon and Apple, and there's no way that they're going to kind of cave on AI. So what ended up happening with those? Because obviously those big companies are part of this deal. So right. What do you feel like we accomplished with AI, and how would you explain it to someone who, you know, has smoked pot every day for 35 years?
I wouldn't. First of all, I wouldn't.
Hey, man, just, you are now, man.
I would just give up. So the idea, the thing we were scared of, the thing that members were scared of, is that this idea that writers would be replaced by AI, that they would somehow, these companies would take all the work that's copyrighted under, you know, that they have the copyright on, they'd feed it into their own AI, which they don't have yet, but it could be coming, yeah. And they'd spit out a script, and either they'd just say, oh, let's make this script, or they'd hand it to Alec and say, okay, Alec, rewrite this script, because clearly it's not good.
But then they'd give it right to Goldie and say, make it funnier.
but the problem with that is then if we let that happen, then there'd be there'd be issues around credit and also what you got paid, because you get paid less for a rewrite than you do for an original thing. And then so we protected that. That can't happen now.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's a really important protection that we have. The first writer is a human writer.
Yes.
And that any kind of sharing of things generated by AI has to be done with consent. And, you know, there are big copyright issues for the companies. That is a way that hypothetical that I was talking about wasn't going to happen in the next 3 years, because there's all these issues around copyright and the fact that that these companies that aren't part of the AMPTP, like Google and the whoever's doing ChatGPT, they're not the companies we're negotiating with. And right. So our companies are worried about that. They've got to protect right. the copyright on the things that they own. But we were just protecting about the future, that as far as these companies that we're in business with are, it's got to be human writers. And that to me is very significant. And that's what people were really concerned about. And actually, the CEOs really expressed regret during this last round of negotiations that they didn't do something about this before the strike. I mean, it's like right. they weren't giving us anything they weren't going to give us. And that was our theory going in before the strike, was they're going to give this to us. This right. protects them. Yeah. And the fact that they said, nope, we're not even talking about it, really scared us and scared the members that, oh, they have plans. They do have plans to replace us.
Right.
But they didn't. They were just like, you know, intransigent in negotiations and said, we're not talking about this. Yeah. And
I'm very glad for these protections, but I also, you know, I always come back, if I work for one of these companies and we were talking about it, I would say, first, every piano is not a player piano for a reason, because mm-hmm. people like to see human beings do stuff.
Yeah.
And the second would be, what's the value proposition of an AI movie? Like, I say, Christopher Nolan is doing Oppenheimer, and you say, well, I may want to see a ticket for it. But if I say to you, a computer's written a movie starring Humphrey Bogart reincarnated right. with a younger Sean Young, you'd be like, what the fuck is that? Like, it's not interesting. So I personally don't have the fear in my heart of it. I get why people do, but I kind of want to reassure people that, like, I don't think that's going to make people spend money to see robot-generated content, personally.
I agree, but I also think that the flip of it, which to me what people were worried about, was like, we can pay you less. We can set out this AI script that's not going right. to be any good at all and right. give it to a talented writer like Goldie, who's going to make it good. Oh. We can pay him less.
You got him, David.
Pay him less.
I'm seeing your negotiating techniques in action here. I love it. You got Goldie in your
He
pocket.
Said my name.
Yeah, and he said I was good. But David, we'll get into some of the, I guess, the finer points. But first, I want to give you an opportunity. Can you speak to, like, maybe some of the points in this deal that you're most proud of, and then maybe after that say a little something about an issue maybe you felt like you didn't get enough traction on?
I think, to me, you know, we started out this negotiation, and it really was this kind of holistic idea around compensation, that we had this information from our members that they're not getting paid enough to stay writers. And I think about my career, which, as you know, has had a lot of ups and downs.
Oh, more ups, more ups than downs.
Yeah, there were a lot of downs maybe before you were born. And and there have been real serious moments in my career where my career was about to end, was over. Like right. The phone not only stopped ringing, nobody picked up on the other end.
Right. Yeah,
it was done. And then I got a residual check that let me stay and you know, and that wasn't happening for new generations. So that's why I always worked in the guild, wanted to work in the guild, because I understood that, like, without it, I wouldn't have gotten to stay in this career. And that, to me, is the thing that I'm most proud of in this contract. It's not any individual issue. It's the idea that we have reconfigure the NBA to deal with this streaming model and to protect the writers' room, to protect writers in every field in which they work. We didn't get everything we tried for, but the door is open on so many things, and we've shown that we're willing to fight, and that will make the next contract negotiations a little easier, because they will know that we're fucking serious. Don't fuck with us. Don't play these fucking games. Yes. We're fucking serious. And as angry as I am right now, it's not a tenth as what it is to the younger members of the guild who stood up and were lot coordinators and captains and came to picketing several days a week. They are fired up. They do not want to put up with any more of this shit. And it's like,
woo.
remember that 2.5 years from now when we go into negotiations, and then the companies were very chastised about this from themselves. They said, we made a huge mistake here, and we should have dealt with this a lot earlier. We should not have let this go on this long.
Do you think that's the work of this publicist who they hired, who was kind of maligned, like it, when it happened, people were like, oh, look, they have to hire a publicist. But do you think that had an impact, that someone might have gone into these companies and said, like, this is just a bad look, and the diminishment of value from this stance is greater than sort of the payment would be to end it?
It's not how it looked was part of it. But the fact is, you know, our theory of the case was 100% right. We caused pain to these companies. Stopping working, shutting the town down, hurt some of these companies. Not, you know, you say Amazon, Apple. I don't think we hurt them. But right. The other companies who rely on the broadcast season, who rely on product to generate that, whose only business is making stuff. That to me, that's why they came at the end and said that. It's like, this was a mistake. This was a broken process. This should not have happened. And we're going to work to make sure it doesn't happen again. That to me is, it's more that this strike, these people going out on the picket line, had the effect we said it would have. It hurt these companies. There's always these rumors they'll go to January, they'll punish us. Or no, they needed a deal. That's why we got one. There's always going to be that kind of like instinct to find, well, who was the big shot who really got this done? The big shot was the Writers Guild of America. It was all those people showing up on the picket line.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Well said. And do you think, because I remember, you know, in the last strike of 2007 or 2008, it feels like there's just a new generation in Hollywood that might be just slightly more inclined to really be fiery about this kind of stuff. I know, speaking for myself, as someone who was, you know, a younger person in 2007 or 8, but I was still kind of an apathetic asshole about everything. I was just like, yeah, it's a strike.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I remember. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, you remember that. Yeah. We all remember that well. But it felt like this time around, like the young people were very charged up about this. And do you think that's just like a generational thing? Do you think Hollywood is changing in that way where now some of the rank and file who have quote unquote made it are still more inclined to be like engaged with an issue like this?
Well, I think it's more a function of what's happened in society. Like I think that, and I'm no expert, but I think that this generation doesn't see, this new generation that's joining the workforce doesn't see a path to the comfortable life that we all have. And they're right that there's this concentration of wealth at the top. And so that even as you say, people who've made it, well, they've broken in and maybe they're writers, but they haven't made it and they don't know how they're going.
I did air quotes when I said it.
that they want a path. They want a path to success and they don't see it. And there are too many roadblocks. And that's why they're fired up, because it's not just Hollywood, it's America. I mean, it's tough in all those businesses, and coming out of college and with debt and that hard to make the income you need. And then you don't know, well, when do I become a success, and all those things.
Right.
That's really at the core of it.
Okay, well said. Now I want to talk for a minute because this felt like the issue that I was always locked onto selfishly was this issue of streaming residuals, which was something that had not been figured out. I think I saw some statistic, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, Netflix started pushing that show Suits. And so I saw some statistic that's 3 billion minutes of Suits was watched on Netflix, and that the entire writer's staff for that got paid $3,000, like over the staff. Whoa. So that sounds absurd, and obviously that's broken and needs to be fixed. So how was that fixed, and how will it affect somebody? Will it affect somebody who has written stuff in the past that's on streaming, or does it only affect stuff moving forward?
It's really only affecting things moving forward, unfortunately. I mean, that's sort of part of the problem with these contracts, is that there's a grandfathering in of old things. And however, we have now two things around streaming residuals that are important. One, we've improved our fixed residual, and it's a pretty good residual for, you know, an episode or a movie that airs. And we've increased the foreign residual that these streaming companies.
That was impressive. I just want to say, that was impressive.
So you've got that fixed residual for everything. And I think you'll start to see on newer stuff that either is made for streaming or is sold to streaming, like that newer things, you're going to start to see better residuals. Just that the older stuff, we didn't have it on those contracts. Suits is an older show, and it is unfortunate because I think that it's kind of crazy what's happened with that show. It's a great show, actually. I watched it when it was on USA. So we have that, and I think that over the next 3 years, members are going to start to see, oh, these streaming residuals, they're actually not bad. We're actually doing okay. But then we have this new thing too, which is we also wanted something that measured great success, outside success, Family Guy level success, that if a streamer made a show that exploded, that the creators and the writers on those shows would see something. And we got that too. And it's a metric they figured out based on how it was watched. That's what they came back with that last Wednesday. And it's not perfect, but it's better than anything we had before. We've opened the door to the idea of success-based residuals. So we have both of those. And I'm feeling very good about that. Like we solved or began to solve that problem.
Well, let me ask, because I think what you're going to start to see is sort of what's happened with Yellowstone, where maybe the networks in a vertically integrated way start running stuff that was on the streaming platform on their broadcast platform and vice versa. Well, those things. So in the future, say, if you do a show for Peacock and then NBC grabs it and runs it, will those be two separate pay structures that you will get? Or will it be sort of just a one-time payment for the medium in which you originally created the show?
I think that I don't want to answer that question without fully knowing the answer. However,
that wasn't a gotcha question,
but it ended up being one.
Yeah. Should we talk to Chris Kaiser's wife, maybe?
Yeah. Susan, she could get on the phone. That would be great. So you're saying if it's on Peacock and then they throw it on,
and then they go to NBC, because I feel like this is what's going to start to happen, as you know, maybe on their side they contract things a little bit, that they realize that people who are watching Peacock might only watch Peacock, be totally unaware of NBC, like my kids. Older people like my mom who watch NBC are never going to access Peacock. Right.
The thing that gets ignored in all that, and again, this is that the fact of the matter is the network still gets a larger share of the audience than the streamer. And the way they do that is with advertising and marketing, and so they couldn't really do that. They may do that. And I think there will be sort of a consolidation that streaming and broadcast will sort of become one. But for right now, the reason that NBC still exists is they still get a larger audience on that than they do on Peacock, a much larger audience. And so if you're going to put something on the broadcast network, you've got to have that run up and you've got to say what it is. So right now we're protected on that, but I feel like that could change.
Should we right now trademark Breaming and Strahdcast?
There you go. I love it.
What was it? What was the first word? It sounded
Breaming.
Breaming.
It's broadcast and streaming. Breaming. Or Strahdcast. Breaming. I feel like this
I thought
could
you
be...
were saying something else and it sounded dirty.
No. Yeah, so Goldie, that's a good idea. TM, a typical disgusting display.
Breaming. Yeah, we now own Breaming and Strahdcast.
David, we'll cut you in on that. We'll cut you in on the foreign
residuals.
That's
great.
That's great. We've got all sides of David already.
Oh my God,
today.
I'm so happy.
The annoyed side.
I can tell.
In the 2008 strike, one of the issues that we were fighting for back then was DVD residuals. And then very quickly...
It wasn't, Alec. I'm sorry.
Okay, cut me off. What? Tell me.
It had nothing to do with DVD residuals. It was only about coverage on the internet.
See, Goldie, again, this is just what we dealt with the other day. Every time I struggle, Goldie gets a huge grin on his face.
I just, you know, that's this kind of myth that's what the fight was about. No, it was only about coverage on the internet. I mean, that's literally what the fight was about.
Okay, so you've heard
Everyone
this before.
Knows
you,
that.
You've had this thrown at you before then. Clearly.
Well, thrown at me. It's like, it's so stupid. It's not
far from now you're making Goldie way too happy.
I mean, I was like, Alec, you know, I know you didn't really pick it in 2007 or really pay attention at all, but it's like
he's going full nuclear. I didn't ask the gotcha question. That was that guy over there. He's there in my box. I'm here to treat you as the hero you are. Rudy Rudiger carried out of the WGA meeting.
What, based on your fake knowledge of 2007.
Oh, he's still going. He's still going. Well, I'm not going to ask that question then because I've been so thoroughly smacked on the nose with the newspaper.
Well, we didn't get anything on DVD residuals in this deal. I'm sorry. That is a big fail.
That was not part of the question. Although my mom still does buy DVDs occasionally, which I find very strange.
I do too, unfortunately.
It's very weird.
This is. I'm gonna show you what I'm gonna show you one I bought recently. It's the Quincy. Anyway.
Oh my God!
Yes.
It's not streaming. It's not streaming anywhere. So
I saw something about one of the cast members on Quincy who played like the forensic pathologist or something.
Yeah. And Robert Ito.
It was maybe a different guy, but he went and established his own real. Like he really was that. And he popped up in like a Dateline as someone who helped solve the case.
That's so cool.
Wow.
So that's
really
Googleable.
Cool.
Look at that. I'm fighting my way back, Goldie. I'm fighting my way back.
Credibility.
Yeah, what else could I talk about with David to make him like me?
Yeah, you might want to double check that and see if it's true, but
I love you, Alec. Come on.
Well, so going back to the streaming residuals part of it. So you're basically telling me I need to start insisting that my name be on Family Guy episodes as written by if I want to make any real coin here going forward.
I'm kind of shocked you didn't know that up to this point.
Oh, God damn it. I like to pretend to be so selfless in this job. And now it's
well, you also, I think, yeah, I mean, you also don't actually want to sit and write a script. So.
That's true. That's a very good point. Writers who hate writing, you have heard that well. Well, now what else can I ask here and not get fucking yelled at?
So did you... I had an idea for an alternative pay structure. I'm curious if it made it in the room, which was the PPJ model.
Ooh. Interesting.
Pay per joke. So here's how it works. You get something in the script. You walk over to an ATM. They hand you $600. You then walk into a separate room where there is a casino with roulette, some games. The casino is co-owned by the Writers Guild and the studios.
Interesting.
And so you take your new joke money and you can like let it ride, you know what I mean? And then everyone wins.
Why can't we do that?
Why does it always have to be a percentage of this and that? Like, why can't it be straight cash for jokes and then try to win big?
Am I supposed to yes and this or something? I don't know.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I completely bailed.
I had to buy time while Alec rebuilt his self-confidence.
Thank you.
No, it's very helpful, Goldie. It's very helpful.
I like that method. Now, before we get to Betamax residuals, I wanted to talk for a minute about staff minimums on these streaming shows. So there were some gains made in that area. Can you lay those out for us?
Yeah, sure. So the idea that the trend that was happening was there was this sort of downward pressure on writing staffs. And there was actually a fear, and it was actually starting to come to pass, that writers were being pressured into having no staff and having to do all this work, not just the writing, but also even through production. And what we did was we codified the writer's room. That actually wasn't anything that was in the NBA ever, but now we have these protections that say, if you're doing a show, if you're going to hire any writers, you've got to hire a minimum number of writers, depending on the number of episodes you get. And then some of those writers have to stay on through production so that it's not just one showrunner handling everything while the show is being shot. And which especially in comedy is a necessity, that you need a Goldie, you need an Alec pitching, helping you pitch.
Is production, does that mean through the actual
shooting,
you know, taping, or does that mean like through the editing to final cut?
I mean, it doesn't include post, but it does include like the production of the show. And I think I just saw your wife back there.
Yes, anyway,
that wasn't my wife. That's why she closed the door. No, I'm kidding. That wasn't.
But so we got that. We now the writer's room is codified in the NBA, and that's going to protect jobs. It's going to make sure that those jobs are there, and that you're being paid a certain amount of money for a certain length of time. We added so many of our writers are making minimum because their pay is being spread out over such a long period of time, that you would have people at the top of the food chain, executive producers, making the same amount of money as staff writers. And we felt like there had to be at least some acknowledgement of experience. So we added a new minimum tier so that there's now a writer-producer minimum that's above the story editor, executive story editor. It's like 9.5% above that. And So there's a lot of ways in which, like, writers, if you get the job, you're going to be making more money so that you can maintain a life. We also got script fees for staff writers, which is something we've been
that's
trying
huge
to get for years now, that they're for many years, if you were a staff for since the 60s, if you were a staff writer on a show, they could just charge off your script fees. You wouldn't get that extra script fee. That's over. That is now.
Yeah, that's a big thing. That means a lot to the people who need it the most at that lowest
absolutely
level. Now, can you get into some of the specifics in terms of numbers of writers on staffs and numbers of episodes that, you know, they...
Right.
They,
so, yes, I can. I have them right here.
There you go. Nice. It's the Karnak bit.
Yeah. So if you're
fuzzy door,
if you're up to 6 episodes, the minimum number of writers is 3 writer producers. One of them is the showrunner. So that writer producer is co-producer to co-EP. There was some concern that they won't be hiring any staff writers, but it's not really that big a concern, because staff writers, one, are the easiest to hire, the cheapest to hire. There will still, you know, this is a minimum. It's not a ceiling.
Right.
7 to 12 episodes, you get 5 writers, 3 writer three of them have to be writer producers, one of them is the showrunner. And then 13 plus episodes, 6 writers, 3 of them being writer producers. And so that's pretty good as a minimum. It's pretty good as a floor that you're always going to have, at least if you're doing a show with a writing staff, that you're going to have that as a minimum that they can't make you do with less.
Yeah, that sounds great, because it, as you said, it that didn't exist before.
No.
Like, so it's not like we're coming up from 2 to 3. It's like we're coming up from there are no rules to here are the new rules.
No, the minimum staff size before this was 0. And now we have
zero. That sounds like a dream staff to work on. Goldie, you and I should work on a staff with 0.
Oh, your Family Guy compadres are like, what? They don't like working with us?
Oh, come on. We like some of them. Now, a pressing question, and we've had a lot of people buzzing in about this, is were you able to get some pizza for Kirker in this strike? He desperately needs some pizza.
It's so funny. that became this.
It's a thing.
I don't remember saying that ever.
You don't?
But Kirker, get some pizza. Kirker, get some pizza. That's what you want me to say, right?
There was more energy behind it.
Kirker, get some pizza. It's more like annoyed, maybe slightly annoyed. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Kirker, get some pizza. I don't know.
Yeah. We're getting there. We'll get it in the booth.
For real, though, what is your approach to going back to writing now, like taking off the negotiator hat and going into writing? And I mean, you joke about you feel there's a target on you. I mean, does it really feel that way? Or is this just the feeling of like every writer has of everyone's against me?
You're facing the abyss that you were facing when the strike started. I don't feel there's a target on my back. I feel like enough people, or it's a wash. Like my notoriety is generally a positive thing in this business, even if it's negative notoriety. So I feel like it kind of, before I was a guild leader, nobody knew who I was. I mean, right. Nobody. I think that actually during the agency campaign, the funny thing sort of happened, which was, I was in the trades all the time because because I was the enemy of the agencies. And I think what happened is a lot of people were exposed to me for the first time. They looked at my credits and they realized, oh, this guy's actually a working writer.
Oh my God.
And I got a lot of meetings out of that because it was like people wanted, well, one, there were meetings where literally there was no job. They just wanted to hear about the agency campaign.
But, you're right.
But so I think it's a bit of a wash. There may be some people with hard feelings, but I don't feel it now. And I certainly didn't feel it with the CEOs. Again, it ended very cordially, very like we came together. We got
come on the yacht.
Yeah.
Yes. Cigars on the yacht. Yeah.
No,
but you never know. And there may be, you never know. You don't know what the consequences are. But I still know the same people I knew before the strike who would seem to like working with me, at least pretend to. So.
Yeah. Right. Well, you don't need us to say it because we've said it many times before. But I mean, this year has been so interesting for you because you've just been through, another big fight in Hollywood and been the tip of the spear. But then just before the strike, you won a Writers Guild Award for Honor Society, which I've said several times on here is great. It's so now good. We can say it's on Paramount Plus and you should definitely watch it.
Because it's also on Amazon Prime too.
Amazon Prime. There you go. And, two of our good buddies.
And I think Delta Flights. You can watch it on the airplane.
Oh, Delta Flights.
Maybe book yourself to Seattle and then just check it out.
Just check it out. It's a perfect link.
See my movie.
It is very fun, but you're an excellent writer. I've been lucky enough to work with you in two places and at Family Guy, which is certainly one of the ups in your career, and at Dad's, which might be considered a down. But I will say, and I'm talking to both of you now, Goldie, you were like John Henry, some mythical figure in that Dad's room where you were cutting down trees, doing, you did everything. And David... Your guidance, in terms of like what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing was invaluable. Obviously, it didn't result. It didn't come out on the screen. But I mean, I felt so much more comfortable having both of you guys in there. But that's just a long way of saying, like, I cannot believe that you're not going to be working as long as you want to in this business.
Well,
let's repitch Dad's. Like, where are the guys now? Where are the dads now? Are there grandkids?
Right.
I don't think of, it's funny. I don't really think of Dad's as a down. Any job is a down.
Yeah, that's true.
But also that show, I loved working on that show so much because you had all these older writers and I'd make references that they would get.
Yeah. All right.
Like all those old Simpsons guys, they were like laughing. I was like, oh, everybody got that reference. That's great.
Right.
I very specifically remember talking about Kukla, Fran, and Ollie in that room and it not seeming strange to anyone.
We had our finger right on the pulse.
On the pulse.
Well, David, because thank you for coming in today to talk about this because this just happened last night. And JC, thank you for agreeing to do another episode this week. I know you have a lot of editing work and other work you could be doing. So I appreciate you churning this out as fast as possible. But David, is there anything else you want to Is there anyone you want to thank? Is there anything else you want to say to the WGA members? I mean, do you have any kind of like overall thoughts here?
No.
No, thanks everyone.
Yep, I was like
the opposite of yes and.
Yes, first of all, I thank you guys. I love coming on here, and it's always so fun. So thank you. But
that's what I was getting at.
I know, but you know, it really is. There's this instinct in the town to create a narrative away from what actually happened, and the narrative whenever the guild goes on strike was that there was this. The showrunners who pressured us to get back in the room or you know, a big agent pressured me. Yeah, like that would work. But that happened, and that's how it really ended. And it's really important that nobody accept that story that isn't in any way true. What happened is just the straight, simple story is that this union went out on strike, what stayed together, stayed strong. It sounds corny, but it's the absolute truth. Another union joined us. We got support from these other unions. And that's what got the companies to make a deal. Everything else is bullshit. That's the story. And we're just going to have to keep telling it because the instinct is, no, it had to have been a big shot. No, it was labor standing up for itself. And that's what I'm going to be saying for years, because I think there's just this effort to take the credit away from the people who got us here. And that's literally the picketers, the lock coordinators, the captains, the WJ staff. That's how we did it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay.
Very well said. I was going to give you the opportunity to thank Seth for his $5 million donation.
Seth, honestly, you're making some joke, but I am very lucky. And one of the reasons I've been able to do the guild work that I do without really fear of it affecting my career is Seth is always behind me. He's always supportive. Incredible. He's always like, keep going. I'm there. And that's a gift that I have, and I mean that sincerely. He doesn't listen though, doesn't so.
No, he does not. No. So we can say not hear,
good. I don't want
to. He doesn't know how to get podcasts on his phone.
I don't want his. I don't
but
want
he can get them on his TV.
If he heard what I said, it might make his head swell. I don't want.
Yeah, he'll never hear it. He'll never hear it. Well, David, that's incredibly well said, and again, thank you.
Thank you.
From me, from Goldie, from all the writers for the incredibly hard work you put into this very necessary fight, and you guys won, and we're here on the other side. We're so happy for you and for all of us, and thanks for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Right. And JC.
Thank you.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Kirker, get some pizza.